There is going to be a tape today from Mr. Armstrong. It's the Sabbath question. But before that, I thought we'd go into a news analysis. It's interesting that in the tape that you'll hear today, Mr. Armstrong does actually refer to what is about to arise in Europe. And he talks about it as the medieval Holy Roman Empire. And certainly it is. We need to look at this, what is actually about to form in Europe. It is going to be very much the medieval empire as it was before, and we need to be aware of that. Now, there's a fair amount going on in the newspapers at the moment here in the UK regarding the no vote and also the repercussions that it has therefore to Britain's and particularly Mr. Blair's position. One thing that is being talked about, almost to deflect the attention from this no vote that's taken place, is the British rebate. Now, what the British rebate is that it's money that the Britain actually has back. I think it's about 3.5 billion, something like that. I think it pays in about 5 point something billion, and it gets back 3.5 billion, something along those lines. And the reason for that is because the Britain is a net importer of food. And the EU, as it was originally put together, allowed various subsidies to be paid to farmers. Now, of course, the British farmer, because he's a net importer of food, doesn't get the subsidies, and therefore there was a discrepancy. And it was interesting on the news this morning, I heard on the radio, that an analysis of the situation and a comparison between what Mrs. Thatcher did when she actually obtained the rebate and what's happening today was quite interesting. And that is that when Mrs. Thatcher obtained the rebate, it was a very, very organized affair. It was, there's booklets produced, there's very, very careful legal arguments and so on, and it pushed it right the way through the EU and managed to get the rebate. Today, there's nothing like that. There's not the organized counter to what in fact is happening. So what you've got is you've got the French who have just voted no, who have enormous subsidies to their agriculture, who in fact are painting themselves within the European theatre as you know, Mr. Clean, and Mr. Blair, because he's got the rebate, has everybody against him. So it says here in this headline from Wednesday, it says, EU plot to grab Britain's rebate. It says, European leaders lined up behind a plot to ambush Tony Blair yesterday, threatening to blame him from the spiralling European Union crisis unless Britain saves Europe by surrendering its multi-billion pound annual rebate. Now, there are scriptures that talk about us going out and hiring lovers. And indeed, when we look at the fishing policy and the way in which we've forsaken the traditional fishing grounds, the coal mining, the steel, all the major industries, the agricultural produce, the way we've had quotas on the milk, and it's on beef, and on it goes, there is, in fact, we do hire lovers. But it says, one after the other, European premiers fell in line with a Franco-German plan to portray the rebate as a sticking point that is blocking a miracle last-minute agreement on the size and scope of the bloc's plans for the next 5 years. So Britain, even though it hasn't actually had a vote on the constitution yet, it seems to be that it's being blamed for the crisis that is in Europe because of the no referendum that has happened in France and the no referendum that took place in Holland. Mr. Blair, in another one, it says this is a week ago now, a Friday, it said Mr. Blair said we must go back to basics. The concept that he has, he says, fed up with a mess over the constitution and of spending countless weekends at summits negotiating arcane issues such as whether he should refer to God, he is ready to tell the Europeans to get back to basics, which is interesting, because in fact what is coming out of the European theatre is very much to do with whether in fact they refer to God, their God. He says, he's talking about the Chancellor and Mr. Blair. It says, both men have come round to the view that the EU is facing disaster because it's preoccupied with the wrong things. Mr. Blair believes that the Constitution was necessary in some very important respects, not least allowing the community to function more effectively with an enlarged membership of 25 nations. But they now think it's much more important priorities to tackle, and he's talking about economics. Now, it's not economics that the Europe again, the no vote in France was not because of economics. Well, it was to some degree, but it was also because it wasn't federalist enough. Another one, Blair turns up the heat in the row with Chirac over the EU debate. Open this one up. It says, Mr. Brown said, to suggest that the problem that Europe faces, or that the referendums were lost, or that the unemployment in the EU is 10% because of the British rebate, is to wish away problems that Europe must face up to. Increasingly, Mr. Brown is winning Mr. Blair's support for a plan to use the rebate as a lever to force the French and Germans to accept the need for fundamental economic reforms in Europe. And that's what Britain is trying for at the moment, is these economic reforms. But we need to be aware, this particular one from the Daily Mail, I thought it was quite interesting. It says, this is a commentary by Simon Heffer. It says, there is no point in the understatement. It says, the crisis in which the European Union, or more specifically, the European Commission, that so ineptly runs it, finds itself after the French referendum, is quite simply the gravest in its entire history. Now, they're not going to give up on Europe, but it is in a grave crisis. Even after the period of reflection for which the Foreign Secretary is called, nothing will have changed. The people of the most pro-European country of all will still have said no by a thumping margin, and the idea of a federal Europe where the interests of the individual nations are subjugated to the decisions of unelected bureaucrats will still be in ruins. Now, I thought that was an interesting comment, and particularly when we look at, turn over, if you would, to Daniel chapter 2. Daniel 2. And just remind ourselves of what we are actually looking for in the future. And notice how this actually fits within what we are seeing at the moment, which is quite chaotic, quite frankly. But here in Daniel chapter 2, well, let's notice in verse 33, it talks the legs of iron. Notice the legs of this European, this Roman force were of iron, and his feet part of iron and part of clay. And you saw until the stone was cut without hands, and it goes into the rest of it. And down in verse 40, it says, and the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, for as much as iron breaks in pieces and subdues all, and as iron that breaks all things, these shall it break in pieces and bruise. So that's happened in the Roman Empire now. And whereas you saw the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, this kingdom, so that at the end time, when we're looking at this kingdom at the end time, this kingdom is going to be divided. But there will be in it the strength of the iron, for as much as you saw the iron mixed with the miry clay. So we're looking at medieval Europe, as Mr. Armstrong has been said, for an awful long time, but with a great deal of weakness actually built in there. And it goes and gives the weakness and what the weakness is. It says, and as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas you saw iron mixed with miry clay, they will mingle themselves with the seed of men. Now it is the expansionist point of Europe that is causing the problem, because they cannot make decisions. They're expanding the European common market into 20, 30, who knows how many nations, each one having a voice, and it's totally impossible. And it says, but they shall not stick one to another, even as iron doesn't mix with clay. So we're looking at this grouping of nations arising. We're looking at this grouping of nations not sticking together, and we can see that actually in the European theatre right now, and we can see it within our headlines. And yet out of this, something comes, and we turn over to Revelation chapter 17, and we can see how this, or at least we don't see exactly how, but we can see what happens in Revelation 17 in this fragmented end time resurrection. Here in Revelation chapter 17, notice in verse 9, it says, here is a mind that has wisdom. And it took wisdom, it took an understanding, it took a wisdom that came from God to unlock these particular prophecies. The seven heads are seven mountains or governments on which the woman sits. Notice the woman, this is the false church, sits. And there are seven kings. Five are fallen, this is the Holy Roman Empire, five are fallen with Napoleon, when this was revealed to Mr. Armstrong. One is That was the one with Hitler Mussolini. And one, the other, is not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue a short space. So it's not going to last very long. 3.5 years is the outside, probably 2.5 years. And the beast that was and is not. So this Holy Roman Empire, this medieval Europe that was, is not. It wasn't, you know, you look at Hitler and Mussolini, and it's not really there, but it says, and yet, but as it goes in another place, it says, but yet is. In other words, he was there. This was a resurrection. It says, even he is the eighth. He's the eighth Babylonish system. You go back to Daniel, and you see the various systems of the various beasts of Daniel, starting with Babylon, going through Medes and Persians, going through Greece, coming into Rome. There's your seven, but this one is the eighth. Is the eighth system, which is the Roman, it's the Holy Roman Empire. Even he is the eighth, and he's of the seven. He's like the preceding Gentile kingdoms, and he goes into perdition. It's going to be destroyed. And the ten horns which you saw are ten kings that have not received any kingdom as yet. So we're waiting for those ten kings. They're lined with those ten toes. There are two legs, presumably east and west. It says, but they receive power as kings 1 hour, a very short time, with the beast. They have one mind, they'll give their power and their strength to the beast, and they will make war with the Lamb, so they go right up to the end time. The very short time, 3.5 years, before the end time comes, and you tie it up with Daniel. And the Lamb shall overcome them, because he's Lord of lords and King of kings, and they are with him called, chosen, and faithful. But notice, they have one mind, in verse 13, and they shall give their power and strength to the beast. This is how the unity of Europe is going to have to come about. What we see within Europe today is the fragmentation, which is prophesied, but we cannot see what it is. There's got to be something, some kind of cataclysm, some kind of trigger that causes Europe to come again together, and it will come together suddenly, and what you'll then see is you'll see the resurrected Holy Roman Empire. The laws are being laid down, but being laid down by bureaucrats. You can see the flavor within the Europe that is there now, but it's not the final final solution, not the final thing. Now, you see other areas in the news. In the Daily Mail on a week ago, last Thursday, it says in a comment about a looming threat to world trade, it says, suddenly out of the blue, the EU faces trade warfare on two fronts. Open confrontation with China over the country's export of cheap textiles, and an even more dangerous and bad-tempered conflict with America over subsidies to the aircraft industry. Now, you know the Airbus, this super jumbo jet that they've just come up with. They've basically been able to give them, not loans, but they underwrote the loans so that if there was a problem, if they didn't actually materialize, therefore they could go ahead and survive. And this America disagrees with. And in both cases, fairly or not, the finger of blame is pointed to Mr. Mandelson. So Mr. Peter Mandelson is in fact instrumental in this problem. And if you know anything about Mr. Mandelson's personal life and preference, it explains a good deal. You'll find that continually. It's another one. It says China is in for a rude shock over asset bubble. It says China is repeating Japan's worst mistakes in the asset bubble of the 1980s and could soon come down to earth with a rude shock, a top Japanese official has warned. It says he warned that the revaluation could set up a catastrophic deflation in asset. It goes on to another section. It says asset and property prices. Non-performing loans would just explode. You'd had a real crisis on your hands in China. They're aware of this, so I don't think that they'll change. It goes on. He said he called the dollar peg highly distortionary, though it has stopped short of calling China a currency manipulator, tantamount to declaring of economic warfare. And there is a problem. China is selling so much to America. It has so many dollars. It has made loans, trying to use up the money that it's getting, and the loans are pretty bad. So when it all comes home to roost, there are other things going on in China at the moment. I had one here from the New York Times of Wednesday, May the 25th. And it says, China becoming the land of shoppers is building giant malls. And it talks in here about, it says, after construction workers finished plastering a replica of the Arc de Triomphe, and buffing the imitation streets of Hollywood, Paris and Amsterdam, a giant new shopping theme park here will proclaim itself as the world's largest shopping mall. So China is moving forward in trying to get into the modern world at a fearsome rate, and yet underlying it there are problems, and there are trade wars being threatened as far as that is concerned, and we're looking therefore at a problems from the east, and certainly that is indicated that remember, we're talking about some problems, whatever these problems are going to be ultimately, and we know that we're looking at nuclear problems. Matthew 24 talks about tribulation so great that there's never been anything like it before and never will be again. So trying to say, well, where are these triggers going to come from? Well, there are other things going on at the moment. We know that we're looking at the Temple Mount, we're looking at the area around Jerusalem being significant. On Tuesday the 7th of June, there's this little article, it says, clashes on the Temple Mount. Israeli police hurled stunned grenades against Palestinians who are throwing rocks at Jews outside Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque yesterday during Israel's annual celebration of its capture of the Arab East of the city 38 years ago. So the police moved into the area of the Temple Mount and pulled away from the shrine about an hour later after calm was restored. Now, we were digging just below the Al-Aqsa Mosque, right beside its walls. So we know the area, Judy and I know the area quite well. But it's a powder keg waiting at that time when it will eventually go off. At the same time, we have other things that are going on. North Korea has a nuclear capability to take on the US. You don't have to have a nuclear capability which is so huge to counter the US one. What you have to have is the ability to deliver a strike against the heartland, against the actual cities of America, and therefore America wouldn't go in if it felt itself is going, may be attacked. Even though it could destroy North Korea completely, it wouldn't allow San Francisco, Los Angeles and these other cities to go. And this is what the thinking is. It says North Korea has enough nuclear weapons to defend itself against an attack by the United States and is building more, according to a member of the regime interviewed by American television. And it goes into this weapons race, really, that is taking place over there. So we're seeing that as a potential trigger. Another area, lack of rain in Spain brings water rationing. It says Spain and Portugal have ordered water to be rationed in the Iberian Peninsula, faces its worst drought in more than 60 years. And it's the only reason why they say in more than 60 years is because records began 60 years ago. So we don't know, it could be a good deal more than that. Another one, this is from the 11th of June. It says, every man, which is today, isn't it? every man for himself as the water supplies run dry in modern India. It says, for all the brave talk of India's emerging as a global economic superpower at the dawn of the Asian century, there are times when the precariousness of modern India's foundations are painfully exposed. And it's got a picture here of Indian women carrying water through a cracked riverbed. It says, according to Hindi tradition, the world will have entered its final stage of Kalyug, when natural commodities like water, once considered the birthright of all men equally, are brought and sold. In this era, often equated to the biblical Armageddon, a violent time of strife ensues as men strive in self-destruction, in a self-destructive world where righteousness and godliness have been overthrown. So even in the Hindu literature, that also has a similar forecast. And again, when you look at what happened when Christ came the first time, the men from the east knew that this was the case, and there was much more about the traditions were far more than just Judah. At the same time, when you're looking at the west, you've got all kinds of things indicating how the West is declining. There's a one here from May the 25th. A vicar in this first same-sex wedding, a homosexual clergywoman, is to marry her long-term girlfriend in Britain's first same-sex wedding, the Reverend Debbie Glaston, 46, a vicar of Brighton. So I mean, how it's as twisted as you can get, basically. That you have a vicar, supposedly holding on to the things of God, marrying somebody of the same sex as the first, and it's a filth in the eyes of God. Another one, Last Supper for family meals at the dinner table. It says, first there was the demise of the apron, now the death knell is being sounded at the dinner table. Family meal times are becoming so rare, according to research, that one in four homes doesn't have a dinner table for people to sit around. And I remember going to a home, actually of somebody in the church, horrendous, I know it was, let's say, in the church, by name anyway, met several years ago. Was it 10 more, no, nearly, rather 20 years ago, and they didn't have a dinner table. If you don't have a dinner table, how can you get the children to go ahead and share the day's activities with you? How can you therefore train? How can you teach them in the way that you need to? Another one from Friday, it says, a gay leader would be good for the party. This is talking about the Conservative Party. Alan Duncan will today become the first openly homosexual man to set his stall to be leader of the Conservative Party. And it's not a ripple of criticism of that fact. At the same time, it says, public shop for religion in the latest reality TV show. And there's some kind of a reality show, and it says three non-religious members of the public sample a range of religious practices and exotic therapies, from meditation, Tai Chi, to Sufi whirling and pagan drumming. And this is going on, and you make your choice. And again, that is something that is now, we can see. At the same time, we've got another one. This is NBC, Microsoft NBC.com, which came through. It says, teacher is told to revise the creationism lesson plan. And this is in America. It says, for 15 years, in defiance of a Supreme Court ruling, Larry Boer taught creationism in his high school biology class. He even compiled a textbook of sorts and passed out copies in three-ring binders. When they find the essence of it is, when they found out about it, then they said, no, you can't do that. It says, the Supreme Court ruled in 1987 that creationism, the belief that God created the universe as explained in the Bible, is a religious belief, not science, and may not be taught in the public schools along with evolution. So it's, you see that being torn down, and you, at the same time as you see the promotion of filth, there is something else that has happened in the UK, which I think is quite pertinent to us specifically. And this is on yesterday's headline of yesterday's paper. It says, now you face jail for being nasty to Satanists. It says, extreme religious groups that advocate child abuse will be given protection under the bill published by the government yesterday. The racial and religious hatred law bill would outlaw remarks considered likely to stir up hatred against all religious groups, including those that are followers and believers of beating children to drive out demons. And the bill contains no definition of religious belief, and the ministers confirmed that it would cover members of the African religion whose adherents were convicted last week of cruelty to a girl of eight they regarded as a witch. Satanists, pagans, atheists would be protected. Having good reason for making insulting comments that could provoke hatred of a particular religious doctrine would be no defense, nor would the fact that they were true. Opponents said the bill would seriously undermine freedom of speech. And it goes on, he says, he hinted that the government would use the Parliament Act if necessary to force the legislation through the Lords. Similar proposals have been rejected by peers. So even though the Lords, which are there to protect as the final defense, they've put in this bill, this Parliament Act, that they can push things through regardless. And you say, well, why? How? Why are we having these things? Well, we know that when Satan was cast down, knowing he had but a short time, he's going to check the church. So you put a legal veneer there by which you can attack the church. Well, one humorous side, I don't know whether you ever see Matt, which is a cartoon on the front page. You've got these two convicts. One of them's reading the newspaper with religious hatred all over it, and the other one's talking to him, and he says, all I said was, not one of your best sermons, Vicar. So It's again, we joke about it, but we do see this. Well, it says here, it says he hinted the government would use the Parliament Act if necessary. David Panic, that's an interesting name, QC, said that because of uncertainty inherited in so vague a criminal law, it would inevitably have a chilling effect on the freedom of expression about religious beliefs or practices. But the government pointed out that there have been few, if any, prosecutions under existing law for telling anti-Semitic jokes, or any prosecutions would have to be approved by the Attorney General, and trying to justify it. But again, once you know where the attack is going to come against, then you see certain things being laid down, and these things that are being laid down, we need to be watching. We need to be aware. We are in the last days. There is a deviant mindset which is all over, and we do need to be aware of these things, not being frightened of them, because the one that we are with, the one who in fact has called us, the God who is over us, will in fact allow this for a time, but eventually he will destroy those that make such stupid and foolish concepts and put them into law for the aims that really are of another mindset, a deviant mindset, which is a satanic mindset. And we do need to be aware of these things, though, and we need to keep our eyes on the news.